Fiji rock the Wallabies. The Springboks march on, and Andre Pollard is on his way to Rugby World Cup 2023. Those were the major talking points to emerge from another exciting weekend of rugby, the second weekend of Rugby World Cup 2023. Welcome back to the Inside Pass. My name is Lloyd Bernard. Joining me in studio in Cape Town once again is Haman Mossad. Morning, Haman.
Morning, Lloyd. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I suppose in many ways that was really the result that Rugby World Cup 2023 needed. Last night, yesterday evening, Fiji beating Australia 22-15 to really blow Pool C wide open, throwing the cat amongst the pigeons there. Australia all of a sudden on the ropes and battling to get out of that group. They've obviously got a fixture against Wales coming up. Fiji very much in the running now, and Wales will obviously need to beat the Wallabies. So a lot of things at play there. And you know, I suppose the first real upset of the tournament so far, if you can call it that. Did the results surprise you at all?
Maybe a little bit. I predicted that the Wallabies would win beforehand, but we were talking last week about Australia not having such a good year under Eddie Jones, only winning one match leading into this when they beat Georgia, what was 35-15, which also wasn't that convincing. They lost all their matches prior to that in the build-up to this World Cup. So, and Fiji have been playing relatively well of late. You know, they obviously upset England at Twickenham. They could easily have beaten Wales. But yeah, look, I thought the Wallabies would have seen enough of Fiji to be able to counter what they brought. But I think physically the Fijians just seemed to overpower the Aussies. They just couldn't get on the front foot. Like Eddie Jones said in his post game presser, they just couldn't get front foot ball. You know, they were just on the back foot the whole time, and that saw them concede 18 penalties. Which crushed them in the end. But not a massive upset, but I mean, it historically speaking, this is Australia's worst ever loss at a Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
So you can still call it an upset.
Yeah, I mean, they just weren't very good at all, were they? I mean, in any department, and Fiji really bossing the breakdown and the physical exchanges, and really just looked better everywhere with the exception of line out. You know, if you didn't know the legacy and the history and, you know, the standing of both of these nations in the broader context of rugby, and this was the first time you had seen both nations play, I mean, you would have thought that Fiji were miles ahead of Australia in terms of where those sides are. So really just a good result for the tournament. I think it's needed one for a while now, and yeah, just well done to Fiji for. I mean, the crowds as well, Haman, are just incredible. The way the crowds are getting behind the underdogs in these matches, and this one last night in St Etienne as well. I mean, just a massive crowd.
Yeah, Eddie Jones said afterwards, it felt like they were playing in a very hostile environment, almost as if it was played in Fiji, because Fiji were essentially playing in front of a home crowd, even though it wasn't all Fijians in the stadium, but it felt like a home game for them. Everyone was backing the Fijians to win, and that made it even tougher for the Wallabies. You know, obviously they didn't go into the match off the back of a good season, and then to have this crowd not in favor of them didn't make things any easier for them. So they've got some work to do. I think a little silver lining for the Wallabies may be the fact right at the end, Fiji missed a penalty.
Yeah,
you recall after full time they won a penalty and they kicked two posts to try and take the bonus point away from Australia, which the kick they missed wasn't the hardest kick actually.
Yeah.
And that one point actually means that Australia is still right in the reckoning, and that could actually be important. That
could
final
be crucial
could actually
the,
still
the
see Fiji
pool.
Miss out. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's turn our attention to South Africa and the Springboks beating Romania 76-0 in Sunday's first game. I mean, just very clinical from the box in most departments. And, I mean, a bonus point wrapped up inside 12 minutes. Kobus Reinach with another Rugby World Cup hat-trick. Makhazole Mapimpi also reminding us of his class with a hat-trick of his own. And just good performances all over the park. Yes, you have to take them in context because, you know, they did come against Romania. But, I mean, sure, when you're making 14 changes from your so-called first team and the next batch of guys come in and put up a display like this, I mean, must be very pleasing, you know, for Springbok supporters. And they really did look like polished world champions here, Herman.
Yeah, look, especially if you pick four scrum-offs in the squad and a few guys maybe playing a bit out of position as well. Mass changes from the previous game. And but it just again shows the depth that the Springboks at the moment have. It's not this sort of the so-called Springbok B team of the past, you know, where the Boks tended to struggle normally when they didn't field their frontline players. But this certainly wasn't the case. And I mean, 11 minutes and 13 seconds, and the bonus point was already secured. That's now a World Cup record, the fastest bonus point ever secured at a Rugby World Cup. I actually went and looked up and saw. I thought back about the game in 1995 when New Zealand thrashed Japan 145-17. And in that match, the All Blacks actually scored their fourth try after 11 minutes and 47 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the Boks beat that record. Although it has to be said, back then you couldn't get bonus points for four tries, so yes. It didn't really count. But it's still
Boks, four tries.
Yeah, the Boks still got theirs.
That is some very very impressive research, Mostert, I must say, to go back and dig up the 1995 files. Kaniso Tshwaku is in France. We've also been going to him during this podcast, but he is traveling at the moment. It's a travel day for the Springboks. He's on his way to Paris to start building up for Ireland. We're going to pull in Sim Kiwe Abanisa from our Johannesburg studios. Sim was in France a bit earlier for the first couple of games of the tournament. He's now back writing from Joburg, and we're going to cross to him to get some thoughts, because on Sunday, you know, the worst kept secret of the weekend, the Boks confirm after the Romania game that Andre Pollard is the replacement for the injured Malcolm Marks. It's now official, it's now confirmed. Andre Pollard will be joining the Springboks squad in Paris today, and it raises a bunch of questions over what will happen in the weeks to come. How do you fit Andre Pollard in? What does it mean for Marnie Lebok and the Boks now obviously going ahead with Dion Ferry as the backup hooker to Bongi Mbonambi? Morning, Sim.
How's it, guys? Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you okay. Can you hear us?
Yeah, 100%.
Cool. Let's get into it. I mean, you've had some very interesting things to say. We were chatting last week when the Pollard news was circling, and you know, just in our news meeting and then in a story that followed, raised some concerns over how Andre Pollard and Marnie Lebok might fit in the same side. Just expand on that a bit for our listeners and readers.
Yeah, look, I mean, for me, if you look at the Boks, you know, they most sort of successful formation, if you want to call it that, is if they have a bomb squad on the bench in terms of the 6-2 split. And when you look at both players, although they do have versatility or utility value to them, this is Andre and Marnie, although they do have that, they're not the kind of guys that you would sit around and go, okay, it's enough to have one of them on the bench as one of the two sort of backline replacements. You know, Andre can do a bit of inside center, obviously, and Marnie has done fullback as well in the past. So the real issue for me is if you bring Andre in, what you're really saying, you know, by bringing him in is almost like subliminal, where you're saying, yes, we are concerned about the goal kicking, because even against Romania, it was iffy. Yeah. You know, you saying, yes, we are concerned. So we're going to bring the insurance. The insurance is now, you know, the whole point of insurance is that it's there when you need it. Now the question becomes, you know, how does that work sort of in practice as opposed to in theory? So if you need that insurance needs to be on the bench. And if, you know, like of the two, I can't see a way around having both of them in a match day 23 other than to go with a 5-3 split to sort of make up for the other backline sort of player that, you know, that might go missing, to negate that risk of a 6-2 split. So that's kind of where, that's my worry. And the secondary one is probably more intangible, which is, so far has been quite confident as the, you know, freshly minted incumbent in the position. You know, does that kind of, you know, does it, you have to say, you look at Pollard comes with the reputation of the guys.
We're just losing you a bit there, Sim. Yeah, I think he's gone. But I think what he was saying there, Herman, is, you know, he's the intangible component of this is how it impacts Marnie Lebok, who's obviously, you know, flying with a bit of confidence at the moment. You know, playing really well with ball in hand, distribution, even the tactical and cross kicking has just been really good. It's just the goal kicking that's been a slight concern. But I mean, certainly not playing poorly enough to warrant losing his place right now. So how does Andre Pollard coming in and all of the hype surrounding him, how's that going to impact Imani Libok? I think that's what Sim was saying around that. I mean, for you, how do you factor Pollard in? I mean, playing him at number 12 is not an option, surely, because of Damien and Andre Esterhaz and how well they've been playing. I mean, how do you see Libok and Pollard working together in the same 23?
Yeah, look, I think it, mentally it probably can play a role on Marnie now, knowing that Pollard is in the squad. That's probably going to put even more pressure on his goal kicking, purely because of the fact that he knows, like Sim said subliminally, he knows that Pollard was only brought in because of the goal kicking. And you could argue that if Marnie had been kicking at over 90%, then they would not have brought Pollard in. Then they probably have gone the Joseph Dweba route and just replaced a hooker with a hooker. But because of that goal kicking issue, and it actually shows, it actually counters what the box have said in a lot of their press conferences. They sort of, every time that question has been brought up, they've played it down. They're saying, like, they're not worried about the goal kicking. If Marnie's playing the way he is, if he's winning man of the match, then it's not an issue. But then they brought in Pollard straight afterwards at the first opportunity. So, look, Marnie has been playing too well to be dropped. It wouldn't be fair now to just go and pick Pollard to start against Ireland. I think Marnie has the inside lane for the number 10 jersey for this tournament, unless he obviously plays a really bad game and then you may be forced to make some changes. But I don't see that happening. He's been playing really well, and I think the big thing now for the Bok coaches will be to try and accommodate Pollard on the bench.
Yeah,
you know, and then that's where the 5-3 split or the 6-2 split becomes essential, because if Pollard is almost a must on the bench now, because you need that goal kicking option. You know, when things go really pear shaped in a big game, then you gotta have you need the option of bringing Pollard on.
Yeah.
And he can play inside centre. I'm not saying you should start necessarily at inside centre, but I mean, if you get to a scenario at the 60 minute mark and we've already missed quite a number of kicks and the score is still close, then you can bring him on at inside centre. You can take Damien or maybe Andre Esterhaz, and depending on who played, you can take them off and you can play Pollard at inside centre.
Yeah.
Or maybe just obviously then make the straight swap with Marnie at fly half. But yeah, for me, Pollard is essential on the bench now. He needs to be on the bench.
Well, you would think so. I mean, they don't bring him back in at this stage on the, you know, into the squad with running the risk of, you know, not having another specialist hooker. I mean, they obviously want him in badly and he's now there. What has been nice to see is that the public, you know, the public backing of Marnie as well. You know, Andre Pollard, with all of his pedigree and experience, is back in the fold now. But from gauging the comments from our readers and just what people are saying on social, there's very much a kind of, you know, response from the South African rugby fan going, hang on, you know, you can't just come back in here and take this guy's place. He's been playing flipping well and he deserves to keep that jersey, and we'll find a way around the goal kicking, which has been nice. We're going to go back to Sim. We've got him back on the line now. Sim, you with us?
Yep.
Cool. I was just curious to hear your views on Romania, and, you know, it's obviously a result and a performance that we have to take, you know, in context, but were there any performances or things you saw yesterday that you think are going to make things interesting for Rassie and Jacques selection-wise moving into Ireland, or do you think that status quo remains and that the guys who did the business against Scotland will progress through the rest of the week in the first team plans?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the thinking, if you want to call it that, of the Springbok coaches, you know, you injure a hooker, you get a hooker injured and you get a fly off in. There's an old saying in football, which is the obvious pass is the best pass. I think we are starting to get into a spot where our thinking seems to be that, you know, like, you know, the miracle pass, as it were. We kind of like, you know, what's the least likely sort of decision, you know, that everybody else would expect, and we try and make that decision. Sometimes you do the obvious thing. And so with the team that goes on to play against Ireland, I think we should actually do the obvious thing. Yes, Grant, you know, Williams had a great time at right wing against Romania. Faf actually looked a very good attacking fly-off with ball in hand. Jaden Hendricks steadied the kicking game, and then obviously Kobus Reinach got his hat trick, and you know, the hookers, you know, who were treated with kid gloves in terms of the calls that they got, you know, obviously to the front of the line out, also seemed to do well, and they got a nice sort of cushy armchair ride in the scrums, you know, from a scrum that was already dominant anyway. And so all those things are fine, but I don't look there and suddenly think there's any one person who actually did more than, you know, who basically like threw his name in the hat. Maybe someone like Mokazole Mapimpi, if you really have to go that, you know, down that path, you could say, well, you know, he showed us his class again. But the rules are exactly the same for him as they are for everybody else, which is Romania didn't offer much resistance, and as unfortunate as it sounds, all those performances kind of like need to be taken with a, you know, with a pinch of salt. And so also you've got to remember, we do have goldfish memories. You've got to remember how well Cheslin and Kirtley Aarons have played against Scotland. I think that game against Scotland, a lot of people sort of underestimate just how good it was simply because of how low the score was. In terms of control, intensity, physicality and aggression, I thought it's one of the best box games I've seen. The only thing it lacked, obviously, was a bonus points victory. But I probably wouldn't make too many changes. I would make the necessary changes, obviously, with the whole hooker situation. And then obviously the next thing to consider is what Herman was talking about, which is basically, you know, do you get a Pollard on the bench?
Thank you so much, Sim. We'll let you get back to it for joining us. That's Simkiwe Abanisa from our Johannesburg studios. Jeez, Herman, I mean, Makazole Mapimpi was the guy I was going to flag as well. I mean, just hasn't done a thing wrong in Bok colours for so long. Another little hat-trick. Limited opportunities, I suppose, in a way. I mean, it was almost like everything he touched, he used and scored with. But I suppose, you know, as we say, take the results in context, and probably hasn't done enough to force his way ahead of Kirtley Aarons into the team for Ireland.
Yeah, look, I think as Sim just said, now people tend to have very short memories. Everyone sort of now maybe have forgotten about what happened against Scotland, and maybe even before that, Kurt Lee and Cheslin have really been playing well this year, and I think they've got the inside lane at starting against Ireland. But Mapimpi, you know, again showed yesterday that he's got great finishing abilities. And he's got great pace as well. You said the one try that he scored was started from inside the Bok 22-meter area. And also the one try was where he ran a great angle to take an inside pass to round off as well. So, yeah, look, he didn't do much wrong. But I think it's just going to be a case of horses for courses. You know, this is the status quo as it is at the moment. And I think barring any injury, Mapimpi probably would not get a shot against Ireland this weekend. You wouldn't expect the Bok management to now suddenly drop Colby or Kirtley Aarons.
Kaniso will be in Paris with the Springboks a bit later, and one update he'll be hoping to get for us there is some news on the injury to Vincent Koch. But you would imagine that if that one is bad and threatens Vincent Koch's tournament, that the replacement is far simpler this time. You know, less kind of complication in identifying a replacement. You would imagine Thomas du Toit would just come straight in. Is that fair thinking?
Well, maybe Dweba could come in then. it's a pity he can't play like a John Smith. You had a guy that could play a hooker and prop. But, yeah, you would expect maybe that to happen because prop is a very specialist position.
Yeah.
Although there are quite a number of props in the Bok squad at the moment. So who knows, maybe they could pull Dweba in as the hooker option. But, yeah, look, I mean, I can't say. I think it's a very specialist position, so they might might just go the route, the conventional route, and bringing Thomas the Toy in.
Some of the other results from the weekend, from Saturday through Sunday: Samoa beating Chile 43-10, Wales 28-8 over Portugal with a watered-down Welsh side that, you know, really battled their way to a victory over Portugal, suggesting that that Wales versus Australia game could be a rather scrappy affair, and obviously a very important one. Ireland, yeah, I mean, pretty convincing, 59-16 over Tonga. We've mentioned South Africa. And then the weekend ended with England, also not overly convincing, but getting the job done well enough with a 34-12 win over Japan. We break now for a couple of days, and the next action is on Wednesday when Italy will host Uruguay. But we'll be back tomorrow morning to bring you more Rugby World Cup news. Don't forget to visit News24's specialist Rugby World Cup hub. There you'll find all the updated pools, fixtures, top stories, and all news coming out of the Rugby World Cup. This has been the Inside Pass. Thanks for joining us. All the best. We'll be right back.